RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it better.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. Here's Lucas and Mitchell. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the Sunday, October 25th, 2020 edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd. And come up here on this edition of the show, going to have five interviews with fighters I've spoken with over the last week or so. You're going to hear my conversations with two fighters that are going to be fighting here on Saturday at the UFC Fight Night card in Las Vegas. You're going to hear from Alexander Hernandez. Alexander has made some changes in his training, so you hear him talk about why ultimately he decided to move his training to Factory X there in Colorado. Also, you're going to hear from Jason Witt, who's going to have his second fight in the UFC. This time gets a full fight camp as opposed to only having 48 hours to step up on short notice to make his UFC debut. So you hear from both those men who are going to be a part of this week's UFC Fight Night card in Las Vegas. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Aaron Jeffrey, who is coming off a win at LFA 93, the main event of that fight card, and spoke to him about the potential of him fighting for the LFA middleweight title against Kyle Stewart. Also, we talked about his win and also some other things in that conversation. You hear that. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Cameron Lachinoff, of course, became a little viral sensation following Bellator 249 in the third round of his fight against Kyle Crushmere. So spoke to him about everything that happened in the fight and what potentially could be next for him. And then the final conversation you're going to hear is with Carson Hardman. I've spoken to Carson now a couple times. He's going to be a part of the XFC tournament that's going to kick off here coming up on November the 11th in Atlanta. So you hear those conversations here momentarily. But before we get into the interviews, I do want to mention about something I saw over the past couple of days on social media. Of course, I know we live in a world where a lot of websites will just run with a tweet that is sent out by Conor McGregor. I understand that's a part of our world, but Conor McGregor had this tweet, just kind of paraphrasing what the tweet was. It was basically calling for Bellator to have, tougher drug testing than they currently have. I'm obviously insinuating a USADA-type program. And, of course, I saw multiple outlets just roll with this story, and it's... Let me just say this. First off, there is more drug testing happening in Bellator than people realize. And it's kind of sad, honestly, that a majority of the MMA media, and when I say majority, nearly all, with that, when they ran with that Conor McGregor tweet, you know what happens? They just do the tweet. They pull an old Scott Coker quote. They don't call Scott Coker, apparently. They don't call Mike Mazzulli, who's regulating all the Bellator events at this point, to say, hey, is drug testing happening? And it was just, I saw this, and, and the one story I really saw that, I guess, really just kind of just a pet peeve of mine was the MMA Junkie story, where there is no author, it's written by MMA Junkie staff, and I read the article, and to me, it was very clear that they didn't call Mike Mazzulli. And I will tell you this, the fact is I'm the, as far as I know, I'm the only one who called Mike Mazzulli in terms of asking him if anyone had reached out to him about this Conor McGregor tweet, and look, I have an excellent relationship with Mike Mazzulli. I mean, look, it's not hard to find Mike Mazzulli's phone number. All you gotta do is go to the Association of Boxing Mission and Combative Sports website. You can get the phone number, email address of any regulator there is that's a part of the ABC. And it was just, I saw it, I was just like, man, this is just straight up laziness that no one's, asking. There's more drug testing that's going on. People don't realize, one of the things is, and you got to give kudos to Scott Coker. Scott Coker has told Mike Mazzulli he can drug test anyone he wants. And as long as, and I know in just previous conversations I've had with Mike, is as long as they are licensed by the Mohegan tribe, the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations, they can drug test. So there's in and out of competition testing happening all over the place in terms of Bellator. I mean, look, is it what the UFC is doing? No, of course not. It's not what they're doing. But I also look at it, if I'm Scott Coker, do I want to, shell out the millions upon millions of dollars to do that drug testing program when I can just rely on a state athletic commission or you know, a member of the ABC to handle that drug testing for me? I mean, look. Yes, would I love to see, you know, a USADA type program in Bellator? Of course, because then we would know everyone is fighting clean. But the fact is, like, I see where Scott Coker's coming from. But like, if you're a media member listening to this and you wrote a story about that Connor tweet and you didn't reach out to Mike Mazzulli, man, you need to look at yourself in the mirror and understand that you're only presenting a very small portion of the story. You got to get all sides of the story. So it's just kind of a pet peeve thing with me that I saw earlier this week of like, it's like, Jesus Christ, man, just, you know, pick up the phone, call Mike Mazzulli and ask him what drug testing is. I mean, and the reality is that, you know, Mike Mazzulli could do 100 drug tests. If all of them come back clean, those articles get no clicks. I mean, that's just a reality. I can speak to that as someone who's been a part of the MMA media for a long time. And it was a story that just, you know, there's certain stories I see that get posted, you know, by MMA outlets that it just makes me shake my head. And that was one of them this week. And so, you know, the synopsis, you know, the summary of everything is, look, there is more drug testing going on in Bellator than people realize. No, it is not at a USADA level, but drug testing is happening in Bellator. And, you know, look, and Scott Coker has told Mike Mazzulli that he can go out and do the drug testing that he needs to do, you know, and it does happen. And, you know, and whether the fighters here in the United States or whether they're international, you know, there is drug testing going on. So that's a big thing I just want to kind of point out there. And who knows, maybe that'll be something we go in more detail on Wednesday's edition of the MMA Report podcast. But this is the interview edition of the podcast. Just had to kind of get that off my chest a little bit. It's kind of a thing that's been bugging me over the past couple of days. But up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Alexander Hernandez. Alex is going to be a part of the UFC Fight Night card in Vegas coming up here on Saturday at night. Of course, Halloween night going to be headlined by Anderson Silva taking on Uriah Hall. Anderson Silva saying that this is going to be his last one. And, you know, and obviously a great run. It was, you know, to see, you know, Anderson Silva kind of go out the way he's going to go out here in an event with no fans. He's actually the betting underdog in the fight. So that'll be the main event of the fight card. But you're going to hear my conversation with Alexander Hernandez. He's going to be a part of the preliminary card, which, by the way, is going to start 4 p.m. Eastern time coming up on Saturday afternoon, as he's going to be taking on Chris Grutzmacher. This is going to be the featured prelim of featured about on the preliminary card. So I had a great conversation with Alex as he spoke about kind of how he felt lost in his fight against Drew Dober, and ultimately that made him realize that he needed to make some changes. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that steps back inside the octagon on Halloween night inside the UFC Apex. It's Alex Hernandez. Alex, man, appreciate the time. I know you've been over in Abu Dhabi helping out the team there. And what's kind of like, as you think about your experience over there inside the bubble, what sticks out to you about, you know, everything that kind of went on?
In the Abu Dhabi trip itself?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. That was a trip. Yeah, that was a trip for sure. You have like all these like minions running around in the full body cast suits, like, I mean, absolutely covered from head to toe. Extremely just precautious everywhere you turn, and we're definitely in like this like odd bubble. The Middle East is, you know, kind of funky already because of, well, for one, we're on the other side of the world, so the time zone's completely different, but just the culture of like, you don't really see anybody in the streets until like noon. Like when I did that Middle East tour last year for the troops, that was something that we noticed, was like, man, the streets are dead until about lunchtime for us. And for them, it's just kind of like the start of the day. And so we were kind of in this like little bubble where we couldn't go left outside the hotel, but we could go right. And if we went right, there was kind of a little road where you didn't ever see anybody on the streets. There's a single basketball court we balled out in. That was a good time. A series of like maybe four or five other hotels I think some other people might have been staying at, but I couldn't imagine from where for what. But we definitely saw other people around us. And then there was a private little beach area on the Gulf. And there we could have some fun on the jet skis. There's a pool over there. And so we would find a little time. That's where the cage is, infamously photographed over there. And so we kind of had a private little pocket, which was a lot of fun. It was a really cool experience. It definitely gets old if you're out there for like 3+ weeks. 2 weeks is manageable. Anything long and that starts getting a little outdated. But the experience itself was really, really impactful because I got to get a lot closer with my head coach, Mark Montoya. I got a lot closer with my teammates and guys that I want to emulate and that I find that we have a ton in common. And Brandon Royval, that dude's just like a skinnier brown me. Like we're so much alike in the way that we approach the sport, you know, and the regards in which that we hold it and that the expectations by which we hold ourselves. And so it was really cool to be a part of that process. It was cool to see how a new team operates on fight week. And it was also like, I really put myself in the shoes being prepared to fight myself there. And I kind of put myself in the shoes of a fighter and what they had to undergo and that kind of experience. So to me, Vegas seems like a cinch, you know, because at Abu Dhabi, I mean, like I said, that's a hell of a trip. Like that's, and I mean like a trippy trip. Like it's, yeah. It's an odd experience, you know? So being there and seeing that was a nice culture shock and a break from the monotony, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the big storyline with you over the past couple months is your move to Denver and now training there at Factory X. And, you know, when I was on your Instagram, you had put this part of this interview that you did where you talked about, you know, in your fight against Dober that you just felt lost. Like, was that just kind of the moment where you said, man, I got to make some changes?
Yeah, you know, I mean, your mind spirals into, like, just the worst whirlpools after a loss, you know? But had I even won that fight, it would have been fine because you get the ribbon of the day. But I mean, fuck, I still would have been just as lost feeling afterwards, win or lose. And I'm so hard on myself. Like, people hate with how I talk sometimes, but it's like, man, the voices in my head are so much meaner than like what I say to anybody else. Like, that's been something I've really been trying to overcome, is like reducing the negativity in my mind. And in there, I was just overwhelmed with it. And I felt like we had worked so hard, but maybe it wasn't the proper preparation because of the lack of experience that we just have as a team, as a whole unit. I was kind of the first generation of guys doing it there. And my coaches and my teammates, everyone, you know, they got me there. And so it's not like we're, you know, it's not for nothing, and it's not a shortcoming of my team. It was just as a pack, we were underprepared. And so like going out there, it was often kind of like a spank on the ass and like, all right, let's go fight. It's like, well, what does that mean? Like, go fight. Like I just go out there. And I mean, that's literally what I would do. I would just go out there, pew, like 0 to 100, go fight. And it was like, where's the platform to build on, or the base to jump from when it's time to explode, or it's time to react, counter, get into like kind of the deep waters. And then like, where's kind of that platform where I can get out of the deep water and recover and then go back in. And for me, it was just kind of, as Mark said it, Montoya, like I felt like I was in a constant state of fight or flight. And there was never really a moment of solace or recovery or even just like calm. Like, there was never really a moment of calm in my fights. Like, I'm always just kind of like, I'm always pressing, and depending on the tide, I might be drowning, you know? And sometimes it worked out for me and sometimes it wouldn't. But it really was like such a battle against myself, and not having the experience in the corner or the experience back home, I wasn't really able, I feel like, to get to the level of my competitors, with the skills I had, because I've never felt like I got outclassed by anybody. Like even now, I feel like I'm a lot better than anybody I've ever fought. I just, they were the better fighter. They performed better. I'm not performing. And that was a big issue. I'm not performing. And so, I traveled around. I got to talk to a number of really great coaches, and Linka with some great teams, and Mark was my guy over at Factory X. And since then, like, man, I made such like tremendous bounds above like anything I had before. And the biggest point was like finding that platform to build on versus like hey, go out there and fight and figure it out on the go. And it was like, well, where do I go? You know, like, where, like, the fight's starting and I'm just going. And that was a big thing when in that interview that I was talking about with Dober, he had such poise and purpose in his approach. He looked completely different than any Dober in the past. His stance was completely different. His movement was completely different. The look in his eyes. I mean, obviously I have stood across the cage from him before, but I've seen those eyes break in the past. And he would take shots and he would stay focused on course. He was just so precise in his intent. And I remember looking at him and thinking like, man, I don't feel any of that. Like, I feel completely lost. I feel like we had a script that just blew out the wind and now I don't know where to go, you know? And I was just winging it. And I feel like often I've just winged it. And we got pretty good fucking wings cause we got this far, but there's a level where it's like, you need more than just like, you know, guts and will, you know, you need, we need some mentorship. So that's what I got.
What was it about Coach Montoya that made you realize that he was the right guy to work with?
He just touched on the points that I need to hear. He broke things down in a systematic approach, and he relayed to me on a personal level, a professional level, and then what he had to say was solely for like the purpose of what I need to hear, and not for the fact of him saying it to sound good, him saying it to boast maybe his ego or anything else, or to even like flatter mine, or inversely to try to like check me, to almost check my ego, because some people might think that I'm like an egomaniac, you know, or whatever, but anybody who's training me knows like it's complete opposite. He was just 100% sincere and real, and delivered. It just felt like exactly what I needed to hear. And the key word that he needed to, I guess the key word in our development was efficiency. And that's what I've like learned most with him, because everybody else has like, and I've worked with a lot of people, and like a lot of people have, like flash gimmicks almost. I don't know if it's gimmick would be the word, but they have a lot of flash to them where like, let's say we're hitting pads and it's like, we're going to pop, do this, switch dance, spin, like real impressive, big, big boisterous moves. And it's like, well, I already do all that. And really I'm coming up with all that shit on my own for years now back home. And he was like, no, like pump the brakes on that. Like we need to build a base. And then through that base and through the disguise of W's and wins, then we can start to put in all these little trinkets and tricks along the way. But we don't just start throwing spinning heel kicks or whatever the fuck else because we just did it for a couple of weeks in practice. You know, it's like he was very systematic with his approach. Everything he did had a system, a purpose. And he didn't just tell me what I need to do. He showed me why. And that was probably the biggest thing. His why made complete sense to me, and more so than anybody else.
And now you got this fight here against Chris here on Halloween night, Chris Grussmacher. What's your take on him as kind of what do you see out of him?
I think he's real tough. You know, I think he's tough. He's got to be pretty mentally sound because he's a durable son of a bitch and he's not scared to get hit and keep moving forward. So that's what I expect. I expect a guy who's, you know, going to want to bring a fight and a guy who's going to want to make a dirty fight at that. And that's that, you know, I've never been really concerned with an opponent. I've never said no to an opponent, despite like time frames, ranking, like anything. I've always just been like a yes man and had complete confidence in myself. And at a state, sometimes it was like, you know, there was a period where honestly it was even like false confidence, but like for the first time I have like such a cultivated certainty in myself that like, I just don't care. Like I don't care if it's Chris. I don't care if it, you know, the Islam fight, whatever it could be. Like, I don't care. And I also don't even care about like running fights back. You know, people always ask me about rematches. Like, I don't care about that either. Like that's in the past. Like I'm like finding such like a center in myself and like purpose in what I'm doing and like a peace to that also. And also like an acceptance of everything as it is that it really does not matter who's across from me. Like, and for the first time I've translated that into my training, my sparring's going, it's sublime. Like it's better than like I've ever had in the past. I came back from that Abu Dhabi trip, like a changed man. Like I linked up with, some good outside guys. You know, I kind of always had that mobility wizard in my corner. And so I have that Yoda in my corner. I have Mark Montoya. I have still my OG coach, Jason Yerington. And I have just really good mentorship right now that have really aligned me. And we're just not really, it was getting to Denver and like evolving myself. And then whatever opponent we needed to take on, we would take on. And so Chris is that opponent. And that's not to say I'm looking past him or anything. It's just, I just needed to, again, find like such a degree of certainty in myself before I was ready to fight anybody, because the guy who lost to Dober would lose to anybody. You know, like I could have lost to absolutely any person on that night. I mean, anybody. And so it really doesn't matter if it's again like Chris or fucking Habib. Like it's just I need to be right for the fight. And finally, I'm at a place where I feel like I'm right. So that's awesome.
And of course, we'll see you there here in 2 weeks from now, October the 31st, UFC Fight Night live from the UFC Apex. Alex, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know anything for you on social media and anything else you want to mention, man.
The great 155. And also Ohana Academy Northeast for any aspiring fighters or guys in the Texas area, San Antonio area. Give the gym a peek. My father runs it. My head coach runs it. Everything that got me to this point. So for young guys coming up, I mean, we're a great developmental program. So Ohana Academy Northeast is my gym back home. And then just keep track of Ohana, keep track of Factory X, keep track of me. Thanks.
And there was my conversation with Alexander Hernandez. Appreciate him coming on the show to talk about his matchup coming up here on Saturday at UFC Fight Night, as he's going to take on Chris Grootsmacher. Also very interesting to hear him talk about the decision to move his training to Factory X and why Mark Montoya was the right guy that he felt to, you know, be a part of the coaching team. Of course, his original coach, Jason Yerington, is still part of the team as well, but doing a majority of his training there out in Colorado at Factory X. Next up, you're going to hear my conversation with Jason Witt. He's also going to be a part of the preliminary card coming up here on Saturday night, UFC Fight Night from the UFC Apex. He's going to be taking on Cole Williams. Of course, Jason stepped up on 48 hours earlier this year to make his UFC debut, but now he gets a full fight camp to prepare for this one. So I spoke with Jason kind of about, you know, what's been going on, you know, since, you know, that 48-hour span where he made his UFC debut and his matchup here coming up on Saturday against Cole Williams. Joining me now here on the MMA Report as a man steps back inside the octagon coming up here on Halloween night, which is typically a night that most promotions don't do a show, but I believe this is actually the first time the UFC's ever done a show on Halloween. So Jason, appreciate the time. Of course, you know, we saw you back there back in June where a crazy, 48 hours or so for you in terms of, you know, you getting in there and getting into the UFC and everything that went there. And I was looking on your Instagram and you had a, you know, right after the fight, you posted silver lining every situation, gained more opportunities to better my life. So, I mean, obviously better your life. I mean, I know we can look at it and say, hey, you're obviously making more money with fighting in the UFC. But in terms of some other ways of how this has made your life better, what would you say?
Well, it's not only just making money. It was my goal has always been to be in the UFC and have a successful career in the UFC. So with taking the short notice fight, they gave me a 4-5 contract. So the silver lining being, yes, I didn't win the fight, but the silver lining being behind that is that I got 4 fights. I got 3 more chances to prove myself. And this next fight is the only one I'm focused on. And that's where I'm going with it.
I know for a lot of guys who've had the opportunity to fight in our current, you know, climate, especially with you at the UFC Apex. So, you know, when they go back a second time, they're kind of able to look back on their first experience and say, okay, what would I change different? But for you, it is kind of a whole new experience because you are literally, you know, you show up, you make weight, you fight and you leave. But is there anything you take from that experience and kind of how you'll do things during fight week?
That's a great question. Yeah, of course. I mean, you can always take a little things from, you know, even though it was a 48-hour fight and didn't go my way. But, you know, just knowing that, that making that walk to the octagon was extremely exciting for me. Even though there's no fans, you still look up, you see yourself on the big screen. Like, I remember walking to the cage and just win, lose, or draw, I could smile at myself knowing that, that I had accomplished something that I had set out to do. And knowing that when I got in the cage that I felt like I belonged. I was comfortable. That's where I needed to be. And I know coming back for the second time that I'll make huge – I've made huge leaps to improve my next time.
In another Instagram post you had, I want to say it was, you know, one of your last couple posts that you said, I'm really looking forward to showing what I'm capable of doing inside the octagon. Is that, I feel like that's kind of like a James Krause bulletin board material that he's put up in front of you of like, you know, hey, this is your opportunity to show the world what you're really made of.
Yeah. I mean, you are who you hang out with, and, you know, I hang out with James Krause and Grant Dawson, Zach Cummings, all those guys every single day. So you're going to get that motivational stuff regardless. It's not from James Krause. It was just how I felt. And I got a 48-hour camp, and that's – I'm not making excuses. It's not the way it went. But I know in a full camp, I know with my head in the right direction, my focus, that I'll make the best opportunity out of this opportunity.
And you got, Cole Williams here, 11-2 in his career. What's your overall thoughts on Cole and what he brings inside competition?
Yeah. You know, legit wrestler, good counter strike with the right hand, but – you know, I'm not looking past him. I'm not disrespecting him at all, but I really think my athleticism will kind of overshadow him. I think I'll be able to out-wrestle him, which most of probably won't think that happened, but I think I'll be able to wrestle him. I think I'll surprise him a lot with what I'm bringing to the table.
Like, as you look at, you know, you've broke down of, you know, other fighters that he's competed against, is it just one of those things of you just, like, you look at it and say, man, there's just, I see the holes there. It's just people haven't been able to exploit them?
I don't think he's fought people of my caliber. You look at my record, you know, you look at who I fought in the past. I'm fighting UFC veterans. I'm fighting UFC prospects. I'm fighting the top echelon of people. And I don't think he's been put to that fire. And nothing against his debut, that we both had bad debuts, but, you know, I don't think he's been put through what I've been put through and through my experience. So I think when I come out there, I think I'm going to have the experience over him. And I think that'll show out in the fight.
You know, obviously getting a full, you know, quote unquote, full camp. I mean, I know necessarily in these times it may not be, but you've had a full camp for this one. So, you know, what do you, when people go, what is different we're going to see out of Jason Witt? What is that going to be?
Man, just, I can't say like, oh, I'm a completely different fighter. I've done this. I've done, no, I've stayed in the gym. When we got this fight, Krause and I sat down and made a schedule of what my schedule was supposed to be. And I've stuck. And if you've ever trained at Glory MMA and Fitness and Lee Summit, you know the workload is more than most people can handle. People come in and they realize this is more than I thought it'd be. This is why these guys come in such great condition. I'm going to be in great condition. I've never had 10 weeks, 16 weeks, whatever the hell it was, 2 months to train for a fight. It's always been 4 weeks, 2 weeks, 48 hours, whatever it is. So to have that ability to actually sit down and pick apart my opponent, set up a game plan, and then set up a schedule around my camp, it's just going to bring out a lot more of my tools. I think a lot of things we do at Glory MMA, the best is wrestling against the wall. I don't think people see a lot of that. We pick up a lot of holes, and I'll watch fights where, oh, you should have done this, or you should have done this, you know. And that plays off different in a fight, but I think I'm gonna exploit that in this fight. I'm going to show what we're doing at Glory MMA.
How much of your preparations is just going back and looking at your own fights and just, I guess, having that brutally honest conversation with yourself of saying, I did that wrong there. Is that a big part of how you prepare for fights?
Not really. You know, it's a past fight. It's something I can fix, but it's not something I'm going to dwell on. I try to dwell on the positive things, the things that, you know, I write in fight camps. And then I let my coaches and I let all those people say, hey, this is what we need to work on to make those mistakes better. I don't focus on the bad things that I've done. It's not going to help me now. It's not going to, like, I could go back and look at the Soto fight and say, I could have done this, I could have done that. Well, that's not the way it works. I let my coaches do that, and I just work on what needs to be.
Now, are your coaches your hardest critics, or are you your hardest critic?
I'm my hardest critic, always. It's just the way it is. And I think it should be. I think you should be your hardest critic. I don't think if your coach is like James Krause says, if I worry about your career more than you do, then we have a problem, right? So if I don't worry about my own problems more than James Krause worry about my problems, then you know we got an issue.
So with James being right now in Fight Island fighting this weekend, how has that changed up camp for you?
It hasn't. It really hasn't. You know, I used to do one-on-one sessions with Krause. I got another coach for that. I'll hit misses Austin Ford or Grant Dawson or something like that. The grind still stays the same. You know, James set up camp the way it should be with his coaches. So he has coaches that run classes that run just as well as Krause does. And he expects the exact same from you. Whether he's there or whether you're not there, it's the exact same grind every single day.
I was talking to Jason High about 2 weeks ago. We were talking about Krause. And he was talking about how, you know, we were talking about how, you know, James likes to trash talk. Does he trash talk you a little bit in the training sessions?
Well, of course. He's going to trash. That's his flow. If he's trash talking, he's feeling himself. You know what I mean? So he'll it's funny. We got a guy, Ben Elmore, call him Bama, just probably mid-40s, just amateur guy, but comes in and just talks the most shit to James Krause, most shit right back, and they wrestle around in class. It's hilarious, but that's who he is. It's how he finds his swagger.
Have you ever found yourself in a situation in a fight where your opponent starts trash talking you?
I haven't actually. I've done it a couple times. Like I fought Mark Liminger, who grabbed my glove and was holding on to it. You can see it in the fight or in the video. I didn't say a word. To each their own. You do you, boo boo. But then I grabbed his glove. He's like, he's grabbing my glove. I'm like, listen here, bitch, you were doing the same thing. So like, I find myself doing that sometimes, but not too much.
Is it just because you're just so in the zone? Like you're so concentrated on, okay, this is what I'm trying to do next, that you don't even think about it.
Sometimes I think about it. Sometimes I don't. It's just not my thing. I'm not a huge trash talker. I imagine I'll find myself in a fight being like calling somebody a pussy or something like that, but time hasn't come to that yet.
And you know, what do you see your key to victory in this one?
Wrestling pressure. Wrestling is a cage. I'm gonna put him in his cage, wear him down quite a bit. You know, he has a good counter right hand, right hand, throws a lot of twos and fours. But I think I'm gonna put him in his cage. I know I'm gonna put him in his cage, kind of wear him down a little bit. I think I'll just grind him out. I really do. I don't think he's gonna be able to withstand the up down that we do over and over and day in and day out. So I really think I'll grind him out. I think I'll TKO him in probably second round.
And of course, we get to see this fight here on Halloween night, UFC Fight Night Live from the UFC Apex. Jason, appreciate it, Todd. Of course, let me know anything for you on social media and anything else you want to mention, man.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much. You can find me on Instagram, @_VanillaGorilla. Facebook is just Jason Witt. That's all I really got for social media as it is. And I appreciate everybody, you know, appreciate you guys having me on. Appreciate Glory MMA and Fitness, all the guys that are just grinding out there. Speaking of Jason High, the FAC champ now, got to watch him H-side knock some dude out this weekend. Oh, it was one of the funnest times, one of the funnest experiences I've ever had in my life. So it was pretty cool.
And there was my conversation with Jason Witt. I appreciate him taking some time out to talk to me about his fight coming up here on Saturday night, UFC Fight Night Live from the UFC Apex. Of course, that fight card will be a part of ESPN Plus, so you got to have that ESPN Plus subscription to watch Saturday's UFC Fight Night card. As I mentioned, prelims 4 p.m. each time. Main card will be at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Next up, you're going to hear my conversation with Aaron Jeffrey, who's coming off a TKO victory back at LFA 93 back on October the 16th, just over a week ago. He has now won 3 in a row since losing on the Contender Series in 2019. So I had a chance to speak with the Canadian fighter about his win at LFA 93 and the potential of his next fight, either being for the LFA middleweight title or in the UFC. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's coming off a win this past weekend, LFA 93 main event of the evening, getting a TKO in the second round. Aaron, congratulations on the victory, a fight that opening round plays out a lot against the cage. Obviously, your opponent, you know, working that takedown, whatnot. And, you know, I was going back and watching the fight. It kind of seemed like at the end of the first round that maybe his gas tank was starting to kind of come down a little bit. Did you notice that?
For sure. I could feel him working hard to keep me on the ground, working hard for some of those takedowns up against the wall. I landed a few knees to the body. I think I could feel some wind coming out of him when that happened. But yeah, for sure. End of the first round, I think the tide started to turn a little bit.
You know, and watching the broadcast, you know, they were when, you know, the kind of the, what basically leads the fighting sequence. Yeah, I think it was Ron Crux, like, you know, maybe Aaron's trying to get up, and Pat's like, no, man, I think he's in a great spot here with some ground and pound. So what was kind of going through your mindset at that point of when you're in that top position in the second round?
Yeah, for sure. I hit that that butt drag that everyone's joking about right now, my favorite move, the butt drag, and he ended up on the bottom, but he pulled guard, which is super rare for a wrestler to do, right? Like, if a wrestler's pulling guard, you know something's not going well for them. So yeah, like, as soon as he did that and I was on top, I could feel he wasn't doing a whole lot of fighting to get up, so I kind of felt like the end was near there.
Was that the biggest surprise for you in the fight?
No, I'd say the biggest surprise, a couple things were him clocking me with so many left hands. I didn't expect that. Maybe I was so focused on the shots, I wasn't worried enough about the striking. He's a pro fighter with 5 wins. Obviously, he knows how to throw his hands. And the other thing that surprised me a bit was him shooting the blast doubles rather than the single. Haven't really seen him do that a whole lot in his other fights.
And of course, the last 2 months have gone great for you to pick up here wins. I know you're going through now the quarantine aspect of being back home in Canada. Sure. So, like, what do you do? Do you use this time to just kind of, is it just mere relaxation, or is it like, no, man, I'm popping in the tape. I'm looking at myself. I'm looking how I perform. How do you kind of spend this time?
It's mostly relaxation. Like, I'm doing some home workouts like biking and running and shadow boxing, whatever, but that's essentially to not balloon up to 230 pounds here. I'm at my mother's place and she's doing a lot of cooking. So, yeah, eating, doing some home workouts. I mean, I could watch tape and whatever, but there's only so good you can get on your own. Right. So, I'll just try and take some time to chill.
So what's the go-to dish you want mom to cook for you?
We had Thanksgiving dinner the day after I got back. I didn't miss Thanksgiving. I was at home, but I couldn't eat anything. So, she saved the turkey for me, and we had the turkey and stuffing and taters and all that good stuff.
As I mentioned, you know, now back-to-back wins here in 2020 here in the last 2 months. How do you describe this year, though? I mean, obviously it's been a challenging year for all of us, but, you know, you've obviously, you know, had a great start here.
Yeah, it's been weird, man. Like, I had a fight booked early January. That one got canceled just a few days out. I went straight back into training camp. I had a fight canceled before that one, too. So I was like back to back training camps, and the COVID stuff happens. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, man, I don't think I'm ever going to fight again. Maybe God's trying to tell me something. I took a month out of the gym during like the quarantine stuff. And then we got that fight this summer and one right after. So things are looking up.
What was training life like at that point? I mean, was it just merely training at home? Were you able to get into a gym? What was it like?
No, there was a full month where it was just me at home, like, again, running, biking, shadow boxing, lifting whatever weights I had around. Really, it's not the way to become a better fighter. I mean, you can stay somewhat in shape, but you're definitely not improving your skill set like that.
You know, obviously, for a lot of fighters, it's been a difficult year getting fights. But you, as a Canadian resident, to be able to get fights here in the United States, I mean, as you kind of now look ahead of here, you know, obviously, maybe an LFA title fight. I know you mentioned about, you know, you the UFC gives you a call, you're ready to go at any moment. What is kind of the plans at this point?
Yeah, either of those two things, man. I think LFA is probably the best option outside the UFC, unless like Bellator or something comes calling too. But yeah, I'm thinking maybe the title shot for LFA, maybe a UFC call. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I know you mentioned, you know, Kyle Stewart seemed to be kind of a name that made some sense. Is that where you think the LFA mm-hmm. would go if they go that route?
I think so. Like, he called me out right away after. Mentioning the title shot, the guys on the broadcast mentioned the title shot. So maybe they already kind of have some plans in motion. So yeah, I think he's probably the guy if that ends up happening.
When you hear someone call your name out, is it motivation?
No, not necessarily. It was the night of the fight. So I was like, damn, man, can you give me like at least a few hours to relax? It was maybe an hour after the fight. I think he commented on Instagram. So yeah, not a lot of downtime to enjoy my win. But no, I mean, it doesn't do anything special for me to be called out like that.
What gets you motivated?
I don't know, man. I think just winning fights like that feeling you have after a win is like nothing else. So that's what gets me fired up.
Can you describe what that feeling is like?
No, I don't think so. I always say that to people that haven't fought before, or like new amateur fighters that are going to have their first fight. The whole experience is way different from anything else. I think that's why you see so many like retired guys come back too, like guys with super long layoffs and they probably have no business being in there anymore. It's really hard to give up.
What do you remember about your amateur debut back in 2012?
I remember being absolutely terrified before, and getting my ass kicked pretty bad for two rounds and then winning the third round, and being so pumped up after and, couldn't wait to do it again.
Did that terrified, feeling just go away? That never came back? Or is it kind of like a no. healthy, you know, emotion of a fight?
No, I don't think that ever goes away. Like, I don't think I feel the same now as I did in my first fight, but, for sure. There's nerves and fear before every single fight, for sure.
Does it go away once the cage door locks?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's when it's all gone.
You mentioned about right now is a time for relaxation for you. Yeah. But, you know, you talk about not trying to balloon up to 230 pounds. So, you know, what do you do to kind of, you know, just, I guess, you know, because I mean, obviously being, you know, quarantined for 14 days because of the regulations yeah. there. What do you do just yeah. to kind of like not just go in, you know, bored out of your mind?
I don't know. It's only been 3 days and I'm already getting to that point. So I don't really know what to tell you. I think I'm probably going to be bored out of my mind. Yeah, I don't know. We're on a big farm here, so that's nice. Maybe I'll be doing some chores and whatnot outside again, doing whatever workouts I can. We have like a guest house that I stay in. So at least when I'm down there, I'm away from all the food. So that's helpful.
Of course, you got a big UFC event this weekend, you know, Khabib and Gaethje. Any thoughts on how you think that's going to go?
I think Khabib's going to Khabib. I think he's going to just like out wrestle him like he does with everyone mm-hmm. else. Maybe he won't just run through him like he's done with a lot of other guys, but I think he picks up the win in similar fashion.
Is there any fights that, you know, whether it's this weekend or coming up that you're really interested in? Like, you're just like, you know, maybe it's from a technique aspect. You're just interested to see how it plays out.
That Khabib one is the one I'm excited for. I'm so stoked that it's the weekend after my fight. So I can just like sit back and relax and enjoy the fight. Maybe have a drink at 10 in the morning while that's on. It's nice.
Yeah, it's an early morning. Being here on the East Coast, I don't mind a little, you know, afternoon MMA. I'm a big fan of that.
For sure. I don't want to stay up till 2 a.m., especially in training camp. Like, if it was, if it's the weekend before my fight and the fights are going on till like 2 a.m., I don't want to stay up for that main event. I'm going to bed and watching in the morning. Yeah. So it's nice that it's the week after the fight.
Final thing I want to mention about your fight at LFA, Kansas has open scoring. How did that work for you? Did they come to your corner and tell you that, you know, two of the three judges scored the fight for the first round for your opponent?
Yeah, so they tell you to like face a certain direction after the round, and you'll be able to see like you and your corners when they say corners out of the cage. They say like look over towards the screen or whatever, and there's just someone who holds up an iPad like this and it has the scores on it.
Did you like?
Yeah.
Is that something that you would like to see kind of everywhere across the board?
I think it's better for the fans. I think you're going to see a lot of guys fighting hard for finishes. If they're down like two rounds to zero, I think you get guys kind of coming out swinging like crazy. I don't know if that's necessarily better for the fighters. It's probably a little bit harder on the fighter. But yeah, it's interesting to say the least.
Did it affect you at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean, from watching the fight, I think most people probably knew I was down the first round. So I look over, I see two judges gave him the first round. It was well known already. I knew I had to do a little bit better than that. So yeah, I don't think it affected me that much.
Yeah, it's interesting to kind of see if that does go about. But Aaron, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know they can find out on social media. Anything else you want to mention, man?
Yeah, everywhere at AAJ MMA. Yeah, not a whole lot to mention, man. Big thanks to you for having me on again. Thanks to LFA for having me. Thanks to everyone who supports me through this journey.
And there was my conversation with Aaron Jeffrey. I appreciate him coming on the show to recap his win there, LFA 93. We'll see maybe if his next fight is an LFA middleweight title fight, UFC. But also, he did kind of, you know, thought out there, you know, if Bellator comes calling him. And we've seen kind of how Bellator has changed their free agent process. So I think Aaron Jeffrey would be a quality addition if they choose to go that way. But obviously, you know, Aaron Jeffrey, this is a guy that is going to be in the UFC or Bellator in the very near future. There is no doubt about that in my mind. Speaking of Bellator, that's going to be our next conversation. You're going to hear my chat with Cameron Lachinoff. Of course, coming off that decision win against Kyle Crushmere at Bellator 249, became a little bit of a viral sensation in the third round where, you know, he grunts at Crushmere and tells him to hit him. And then after Kyle Crushmere hits him, he says, "Is that the best you got?" So spoke to Lachinoff about that sequence and also talked about, you know, the fight overall in general and what may be next for him. So here's my conversation with Cameron Lachinoff. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who I guess became kind of a little bit of a viral sensation on Thursday night inside the Mohegan Sun, Cameron Lachinoff. Cameron, man, appreciate the time. Obviously, we'll get into kind of that viral moment that you had there. But, like, of course, as I mentioned before, we got going. Congratulations on the victory. But how do you assess your performance on Thursday night?
Thank you. Like I said before, I was focused on the game plan. I was focused on the W, and I think we did a pretty good job of it, focusing and sticking to the game plan and just getting the W.
And, of course, you win 29-28. All three judges had the exact same scorecard. They gave Kyle the first round, gave you round two and round three. Was that kind of how you thought the fight was going to go when the final bell sounded? Was that kind of what your thought it would be the result?
For the judge's decision, yeah, I thought the same way that first round he had in the beginning of round, he had a high kick, there's a head kick, and he had good connection with hands, couple of punches, good connected. And that I gave him the first round, and between the rounds, my coach said it's probably his round. And the second, third round, I know it was me because I was pressing, I was dominating, and I was the one who was actually trying to fight and finish the fight. So
the very end of the fight, you drop, you go for the leg lock. Is that something you wish you would have gone for sooner?
10 more seconds. Yeah. 10 more seconds. I hesitated. I double thought of going for it or not going, because you may end up in a bad position where the judge is going to just give him the, you know, round. But at the same time, I wanted to go for it and try to finish. I think I missed that when they said 30 seconds left. My goal plan was to go right before that 30 seconds. When they said the 30 seconds, I was just going to go there. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, there's 30 seconds. Am I going to have enough time? Not. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. I got to finish the fight. If I can finish him, I'm just going to go for it. And I wish I had another 10 seconds, maybe sooner, but minimum 10 seconds I needed there. I could secure that either hill or the knee bar.
Is that kind of balancing risk-reward in a fight?
Definitely, yeah, yeah. A lot of people hate going for it because you end up on the ground, the guy's on top of you, he can throw big punches, and one good straight punch to the head, it could be lights out. But definitely it's a risk-reward action, you know. If you don't risk it, you're never going to get that reward.
One of the things I found really interesting what you said to the media after a fight was, we need fans back. Is it one of those things of, for you as a fighter, you just kind of that emotion fuels you?
Yeah, definitely. It gets my adrenaline level. It's like through the roof. I just love being around. It's most of the times I get, you know, the good vibes, but even the people that maybe go for the other guy motivates me even more. Just like I had a message from a lot of my supporters and family saying that, oh, look at that. Habib just tweeted saying that, good luck, Kyle. I said, hey, that only motivates me. you know, just the people were hating on him for that reason. I was like, please don't. I love the guy. I love him in and out of the cage. He's very humble. I know him personally, like as a his personality is very humble. And I told him, just don't. He doesn't probably remember me, and he doesn't know that Kyle's fighting me. Even if he does, he trains with Kyle all the time during his camps. It's not me that his partner, the training partner. It's Kyle. So I give him the props.
Were you surprised, Kyle, pretty much for the most part, outside of the end of the first round and then the clinching against the cage there in the third round, that he pretty much just boxed you? I mean, were you surprised by that? Did you think you would see more wrestling out of him?
I think he was surprised more that he went for a takedown. He couldn't do it. Hey, I trained with for this special fight, I trained with only three people that was wrestlers, D1 level. And yes, he had 15 years of wrestling, like he said in his interview with you. Yes, he could think that I'm nobody, but we saw. Did he land one takedown? Nope, not even one takedown. I thought that he's going to try to do more stand-up with me because he didn't want to go on the ground, as I know that he's a new guy. I want to give him credit. He's in 3 years, he did good job. You know, he built a good record, 5-6-0, whatever. In 3 years, he came from wrestling straight to MMA. I don't think he had any amateur fights, but definitely, probably they're sitting home thinking, why didn't we wrestle him? You know, I think that way. My coaches probably think the same way. The game plan wasn't the perfect fit for them.
And of course, the video that is going around and around of you, where you kind of grunt at him and you tell him to hit him, and then you say, that's all you got. And like, I try to put myself like in a fighter's position of like, if I'm Kyle and I just threw the hardest punch on you, it lands straight on your jaw and you still keep coming forward. Like, tell me if I'm wrong. Do you think that demoralized him?
I personally do so. I think he did. He was like, oh, shoot. You know, I just gave him the best punch I have, and that dude is still walking towards me. It's like something's wrong with him. I mean, if I was in his case and I do that, I would be like, oh, man, what do I do now? Just back out, I guess. But in real life, one thing that I think I opened up a little bit myself here, where I do this during the practice. People that train with me, people that spar with me, they know that this is me. You know, I wasn't doing a show. I wasn't trying to get, you know, people or like talk about me or go viral or anything. It was just me, you know. Like, yes, my coaches know I do get motivated when I get punched. It sounds stupid. It is stupid. It does damages and all that. Hey, but we're fighting. I mean, we're not the smartest people if we're fighting for, you know. But at the same time, for me, it's sport. It does motivate me. He punches me. I ate it. And like we say, it's not about how hard you hit. It's how hard you get hit and keep going forward. So I think he was kind of surprised when he threw that 1-2 and didn't really do any damage. And I kept going after him. Maybe, you know, and I probably won the in front of the judges too, you know.
Were you trying to engage him in a brawl? Was that part of the thought process there?
Always. I mean, if you saw the fight, I was the one in the middle of the cage trying to pull him up and going after him. At the same time, I didn't want to run after him. I hate doing that. But at one point, I felt like we were going around the circle. It's just me going after him, trying to catch him, and then I start backing up. I'm like, maybe he's gonna come after me. And that's when he threw the punch. I was like, yeah, hit me again, let's go. And he still backed out, so I was like, you know, whatever.
Now when the fight's over, did the coaches go, cameraman, that may not have been the smartest thing to do?
Yeah they told me a lot. Don't you ever do that again. I was like, okay, yes, coach.
But of course, you extend the winning streak. You've been on this great roll here. You know, you mentioned Dylan Danis. You said, "Look, I'm not the type of guy that calls guys out." You mentioned Dylan Danis, you know, kind of what is next for you? I mean, I know you mentioned like, "Hey, man, I'd love to get on the same card that Nick Newell's on." What's kind of the plans at this point?
Honestly, like you said, I'm not the type to call out anybody. I say God's plan, whatever He has it. It's gonna lay out well. I trust him. Whatever God has in plan for me, it's gonna lay out well. My managers know it better. My plan is just focus on whatever they have for me, work my ass off, train hard, stay healthy, and compete again as soon as possible.
You know, I know we kind of briefly talked right before we start here, but health wise, everything's good. Pretty much like, hey, man, if they offer me a fight next week, I'm there.
I was talking actually. Yeah, I had just have a little bit of leg pain, but nothing broken, nothing actually injured. I think it's just from the kicks. But other than that, I'm looking to go back, start training actually tomorrow or the next day. It's just a little bit of craziness around Massachusetts here that you got to put a mask on, roll, to do jujitsu, to do boxing. So I'm like, let me enjoy my day or two off with my newborn and with my family, definitely. And then I'll go back.
Yeah, that's a weird thing. I think a lot of people don't understand what it's been like to be a Northeast fighter over the last 8 months of just kind of, not just the fact of not being able to get fights, but also just the limitations on what you can do training wise.
I don't know about Northeast, but being a Massachusetts fighter, I don't know if you heard the word saying mass hall. It applies perfect for it. Mm-hmm. There's no gyms that allow you basically train without a mask in Massachusetts. Connecticut, yes, it's good. The problem is I got to travel 1 hour or whatever. I got to find a place. I got to find a... Then you got to New Hampshire, you got to travel 2 hours, 2.5 hours one way. Yes, there are some places that, you know, close eyes, but it just sucks right now. In Massachusetts is the probably only state that left that uses gloves. I mean, not the gloves, the masks while training, while grappling. I completely understand my coaches and the other people. They don't want to risk their business, and that's the bread for their family. So I can't blame them, but it definitely sucks. And honestly, God knows, maybe it wasn't, but I personally think I had the worst training camp. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the best, because I was focused on a specific thing with only 2-3 people. Instead of going with 45 different coaches and 45 different training partners, I was only focused on 3 people. And it's usually one day is, for example, John Viruette is available, a very great wrestler. Shout out to John Viruette, one of the best wrestlers out there. Then second day is his brother, Ricky, is available. One is not available. The third day I have another wrestler, grappler, Abbas Tamaradze, available. It's like I didn't have the package, like 4 of them or 5 of them available every day for me. They made time actually around my clock to come and help me. Those guys, I own them big time. You know, those are the family. They were coaches, always made time. They trained me around 8-9 o'clock, so it's better for my fight. Even though they have a family, they have stuff to do. Nobody wants to train that late, but that was a perfect fit. So my body actually gets used to it for that 3 weeks we had. Just right around 8:30, 9 o'clock, that's where my fight happened.
Awesome. And once again, congratulations on the victory. Look forward to seeing when the next fight's going to take place. Cameron, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know if they can follow you out on social media. And, of course, anything else you want to mention, man.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you for giving me the opportunity. It's a pleasure being on your show. It's an amazing feeling, obviously, getting the W on a big stage now, 5-0. Hopefully, we get better and bigger fights from now on. And, looking forward to talking to you soon on the next fight.
And there was my conversation with Cameron Lashinoff. Appreciate him coming on the show to talk about his victory there at Bellator 249. Obviously, someone to pay attention to there in the 170-pound division there in Bellator as a guy that's been on a great roll, and kind of see what be interesting to see what Bellator does with him going forward. And now in our final conversation, you're going to hear with one of the men that's going to be a part of the XFC welterweight tournament that's going to kick off here on November the 11th, XFC 43, and that is Carson Hartman, the Utah-based fighter. He's going to be taking on Bradley this year. So I had a chance to speak with him about this matchup, which you'll hear in this conversation. The funny thing is he actually did not know who his opponent is until I mentioned it to him. Join me now here on the MMA Report. A man's going to be a part of the XFC welterweight tournament in Atlanta. Come up here on November the 11th. Carson, man, as always, man, appreciate time. It's been a little bit of time since we've had a chance to talk. Of course, you got a win back there in February, right before our world kind of came crashing down here in the United States. So, like, how do you describe 2020?
Great time for opportunity. It's a great time to really check yourself, whether that's in physical condition, spiritual condition, mental condition. I think it's let us know, all of us, where we are. It's been a reality check on all levels.
I think we've all learned to adapt in whatever we do. In terms
Absolutely.
Of adapting for you, in terms of, did you have to adapt to your training?
You know, it's been a little interesting. I don't know if I'd say adapt, but there were some changes. Our old gym actually ended up closing. My coach was just getting a little older and out of the game. And when I say old gym, we used to teach kids there. And then, like, the adults were kind of on the side. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I was in, obviously. So it was a good opportunity for us where we just kind of – we said, hey, let's take advantage of COVID. Let's move the gym out to your house, Carson. I'm actually working out in my grandpa's old diesel shop back on the farm here. That's where my fancy wallpaper's from. It's from his house, actually, from the early 70s. So, it was a really good opportunity for us to make that move, make that change, and that's where we're at now. And it's been great for me. As far as adapting, it's always been just kind of me and my coach. There have been a few other steps that we've made. We've reached out to another gym as of recently, the 4-7, who is also here in Lehigh, which is like 5 minutes from my house. So they've been wonderful to me, been great. So those are kind of the changes, I guess, if any.
In terms of building the gym at you know, the new gym, I guess you would say, did you have to adapt? Like I've heard, like, some fighters will say, like, you know, maybe they didn't have certain things around the house mm-hmm. to get everything together. So all of a sudden they were getting a car as the cage wall, for instance. Did you have to do anything unique at the start of this when you were kind of putting everything together?
I don't know if I would say, like, getting a car. I don't know if I've gotten that unique yet. But I will say I've had some old scrap metal that's probably been sitting out there since my grandpa's grandpa. And I've cut that up with a torch, and I've used it to hang my heavy bags out there. And then we had to bolt it to the cement. I did all of that. I had to weld everything. I literally drug it in, like, with my own hands. It's this huge steel structure, you know, and that's probably about as unique, I guess, that I got. But it's not really that unique. It was just, like, more like, oh, hey, that's just sitting there. We'll use it.
And, you know, the other big thing of, is you made a big change in your diet with going no red meat. So what brought that on?
Dude, I'm a little sad about it. little heart melt right there. I miss my steak. Honestly, it's been about probably almost a year ago. I just started noticing, I just felt heavy after red meat. Mm-hmm. It's not like anything religious. It's not anything, I guess, like the fad, you know, there's the huge, the Netflix thing. That's the game changers about everyone's going vegan right now and trying it out. It's not so much that. In fact, I've never even watched the game changers. It was more like I felt better when I was eating. I don't even eat chicken, honestly, right now in fight camps. I actually just eat fish. That's literally all I've been for protein. I just eat fish. Now, that's not to say that's where I get all my protein from, but I definitely try to get back to more of like a whole foods diet. I try to go. I was joking with my manager, Lance. Whole food is equal to whole check. Y'all, it is expensive buying organic, or, you know, I'm trying to raise a garden in my backyard. I'm doing like an inside garden too, to try to help supplement with all those things. Working with a nutritionist, obviously, so I'm making sure that none of my levels are out of whack or whatever, that I'm doing this right. So it's just more about me being feeling better. I feel quicker. I feel lighter. I don't feel so groggy, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like kind of like when you first wake up, I remember I'd pound a steak. I kind of felt like afterwards, it was like I was waking up in the morning. It's kind of just a little slow, a little lackadaisical. And it's like, all right, go train. And it's like, no, man, hold on. Give me a moment to digest this fat 12-ounce steak I just swallowed in one bite. So it's just been more like that. It's just those kind of things.
I think we can all kind of understand that. I had some steak on Saturday night, and after I had it, I really didn't want to leave the couch. I get what you're saying. In terms of fish, like, is there a go-to fish that you prefer?
The cheapest one, man. Seafood's expensive.
It is.
I eat a lot of tilapia. I've had scallops. I've had a little bit of shrimp this fight camp, but mostly tilapia and a little bit of salmon is mostly what I like to eat, just because it's easy to prepare. It goes with just about anything. I feel like as an athlete, it doesn't really matter. It's like filling up your car with gas. I don't care if I go to 7-Eleven. I don't care if I go to Chevron. It's just fuel. So I don't care what I mix it with. Just get it in the tank.
Yeah, tilapia is a piece of fish my wife likes to cook. And what she does, she puts she bakes it and puts lemon pepper dressing over it. It's really good. So,
I do a little bit of lemon pepper and a little bit of dill, and that's about all I do.
Yeah, it's, of course, living here in Florida, you know, seafood's pretty much a part of the diet. But, of course, I mentioned you're coming off that win, and now you got this tournament, opening round of the XFC. Of course, they're back. Kind of how this all come together for you?
I thank my manager every day, Iridium, Jason House, I've got Lance, I've got Jacob, all those guys. They've been fantastic to me. They're the ones who really set it up. I love the fact that I literally just focus on training. You talked about COVID. That's what I've been doing just this whole time, just sharpening that knife, sharpening my tools. And they've been out there on the look for these kind of things. So one day we got a call actually from Fierce, and they said, hey, we got a fight for you. And we said, sure. And right as they're about to send the contract over, we actually got another contract from XFC. And Lance called me back, and he's like, so what do you think of this deal? And I said, well, I like XFC. I think that's, I think it's the next step in my progression. It's getting me out of state. It's giving me an opportunity to fight more than just local level guys. And the guys that are definitely around here, they're not just like local level. We got some big names floating around here that were definitely on my plate that could have been an option. But I just felt like XFC had more to offer for my business as a fighter. And it's been wonderful that Fierce and Steel Fist MMA, both of them have offered me that platform to kind of make that next jump, that next level up. So I appreciate everyone who's been a part of it.
What's your thoughts on Bradley as an opponent?
That's the first I've heard him as an opponent. That's really cool.
Bradley Dashear is a name that I was told that's your opponent.
What's up, Brad? I have no idea. I actually was asking Lance, I was like, do we know my opponent yet? And he's like, I don't know yet. And I was like, okay, well, will we know soon? And he's like, I think so. So I guess soon is like right now. I don't know anything. Tell me about Brad. What do you know about Brad, Jason?
Tell me about him. I have not watched film on him yet. I've not sat there and watched film on him yet. So, but that's that was the name I was told about 2 hours ago. That's who you were fighting.
Well, I would assume he's got to be decent. If he's going to XFC, he's got to have, I'm assuming, a decent record, if not a good one. And he's good enough to be in a national level show. So if that speaks anything to him, I think it should. But game plan's always the same though. We've been over that. I don't really train There are a few little tweaks that I might make to each opponent, but for the most part, I fight my game. I try to fight my fight. I don't worry about what the other guy's doing. If I perform my duties and my skills properly, it's just winning is a byproduct after that.
Is it one of those things, like, I feel like fighters, for the most part, they kind of say, you know, early on in their career, they worry so much about their opponent and their opponent's abilities. But then as you kind of, you progress in the game, it just becomes this, okay, I'm aware with what they do, but my concentration is on myself. Was there mm-hmm. a moment where like there was a, like, or was that always your mindset of like, man, this is about me. I'm going to be aware of what my opponent does, but ultimately at the end of the day, it's about me.
Mm-hmm. I'd say we really, I mean, it's always, we've always had those two mentalities, and there's definitely, I think even when you get higher up, there's still guys in a lower level UFC that still have that mentality of work on, you know, what's the other guy going to do? What's their game plan? What's this and that? So there's two different kind of shifts that you can go with strategy there, because both of them definitely work. But I definitely have the opinion, obviously, that focusing on yourself, because that's all you can control, yeah, is the better approach. And I would say our focus, we were about 50-50 for about the first 3 years of me fighting, mm-hmm. Including my amateur fights. And then after that, you reach this point where it's like, you kind of seen it. You've seen it all. Like, you've seen the wrestlers, you've seen the boxers, you've seen the guys with amazing leg kicks, amazing grappling, you know, crazy submissions, but they just get better after that. That's all it is they're just the next level up from those guys. And so you just kind of learn, like, okay, I've already seen it all. I just need to work on what we do know. Like, we already know my holes as a fighter and how we need to fill those holes. And so that's kind of what our shift. So that's been like, what, last 2 years, I want to say. We've been definitely more on the side of focusing on myself. That answers that, and the process of how we got to there.
You know, they always talk about your evolution as a martial artist, fight to fight. What would you say, how have you evolved as a martial artist since February?
The mentality side, the mental side. Everyone talks about it. I feel like everyone says fighting is 100% mental and 10%, you know, physical. But I feel like talk is cheap, and I go to other gyms and I've seen other people train, or I hear about their regimen, and it's like, God, they are training more physically than they are mentally. I hardly hear about how fighters actually have a specific day or a specific time that they sit down and watch film. Or they read martial arts books, whether that's, you know, Book of Five Rings or a book by Bruce Lee. I think philosophy in martial arts is a huge aspect. I think everyone can agree there's just times where you step in that ring and you can feel an energy. And uh-huh. I think, you know, like, oh, this is going to be a technical fighter. This dude's going to brawl. Like, he's going to come out blazing. I think those things are real. I feel that in the ring. And I think anyone else could say the same. So I think doing philosophy, training your mind, like being in tune with those kind of feelings is very important. And that's, I've been focusing a lot on that during this whole COVID time, and also during, you know, the last couple of years as well. So,
you know, obviously feeding off the energy, and some fighters, they feed off the crowd energy. And obviously, you know, depending on where you're fighting, state to state, it's different on how many people they're letting in the building. You know, are you the type of guy that you feed off that energy? And do you think, like, are you like sitting there going, man, I wonder what it's going to be like in November?
That's, yeah, I'm wondering what it'll be like. I'm totally clueless. I've always performed in front of a crowd. I've never thought about not having a crowd. Never in a million years did I think I'd be in this situation. I have anxiety. So knowing there's people watching at that level, it does give me more anxiety. But so I don't know. I don't know if it helps me, like the anxiety to win, I got to win, or if it's more like the pressure's taken off and so then I'm able to win. I don't know. We'll just go in there. I'll do my thing. I try to tune all of that out, as hard as that is sometimes. You know, you got the roaring of the crowd, your adrenaline pumps when you hear them screaming for you or against you. you know, you just want to go out there and smash some heads.
And, of course, it all comes down here on November the 11th in Atlanta, the XFC opening round of the welterweight tournament. Carson, appreciate the time. Good luck here in the matchup. Of course, let me know anything on social media and anything else you want to mention, man.
No, I think I'm good. I just shout out to my coaches, Jason Mertlich, Rad Martinez, Arnold Anderson, or Anderton, excuse me, and Mark Balser. I appreciate their willingness to work with me and abilities to do what they have.
And there was my conversation with Carson Hartman. I appreciate him coming on the show to talk about his matchup in the opening round of the XFC welterweight tournament, which of course going to kick off on November the 11th. I will mention I'll have another XFC interview come up here on the podcast next week as I talk to Scott Hudson. So be sure to look out for that interview come up here next week on the MMA Report podcast. That interview will be in video form up on the MMA Report as well. We'll let you know some of the other fighters I've recently talked to, some interviews that I have not posted yet. Talked to Darren Cruikshank, who's actually going to be fighting come up here on Friday night here in Central Florida, as I had a chance to talk to him. Of course, this will be his first fight since that loss in Bellator, and so you hear from him. Speaking of Bellator, I talked to Toby Misak, who, of course, will be fighting here on Thursday night at Bellator 250, so look forward to that. Also spoke to Michael Hill. He is going to be a part of that XFC tournament as well. So be on the lookout for those interviews on theamereport.com this week. Is what I really try to do is I always like to try to put up at least one piece of new content every day up on theamereport.com of original content. So as always, I appreciate everyone that goes out there and checks out theamereport.com. Also, be sure to check out HelloFresh. I spoke about them on Wednesday's podcast, and I've been blown away with the food that that my wife and I have made here at the house. So if you go over to HelloFresh.com/MMAReport80, use that code MMAReport80. I will tell you, it's up on my Instagram handle. Just an amazing product. I've been blown away, and looking forward to delivery that I'll have come up here this week. Of course, if you're not following me on Instagram, do that at @Jason_Floyd. Of course, the next episode of the MMA Report podcast will come out on Wednesday. Usually that'll get out, you know, late in the morning, early afternoon. Myself and Daniel Galvan, we are going to take a look back at what happened at UFC 254. Khabib Nurmagomedov, his dominating victory over Justin Gaethje, but also the retirement announcement that he made following the fight. And I think that caught some people off guard. And, you know, of course, after the fact, you know, talking about the injury that he did have leading into the fight. And so we'll break that one down for you. Also talk about the great performance by Robert Whittaker in the co-main event against Jerry Cannonier. And if you have not seen the Casey Kinney and Nathaniel Wood fight, go back and watch that fight. That was a great fight between those two guys. They were fighting at 140 pounds, but of course both those guys are at 130 pounds. So we will take a look back at UFC 254 and kind of talk about the future of the lightweight title as with Khabib Nurmagomedov announcing his retirement. Also, we'll get you ready for Bellator 250, which is coming up on Thursday night, as it's going to be headlined by a great matchup between Douglas Lima and Gegard Mousasi. Those fighters will be meeting with the media early on this week, as it is going to be taking place. I want to say on Tuesday is when that one's going to be taking place. I know I got the press release the other day, but for some reason I can't find it here on my computer. Yeah, basically everyone that is a part of the main card is going to be taking part in this virtual media day that's going to be taking place here later on this week. So I will have covered. As long as I'm here in the office, I will have coverage of that over on the MMAReport.com. As I finally did find the email. That's going to actually be taking place on Tuesday, as Nick Newell, Ty Gurr, Douglas Lima, Desiree Yanez, Henry Corrales, Vitor Ortega, Brandon Gertz, Gegard Mousasi, Dalton Rasta, and Jake Hager will all be taking part in this Bellator 250 virtual media day. And, you know, it's a 3-fight main card on Thursday, so looking forward to it. Obviously, we're all intrigued with that matchup between Gegard Mousasi and Douglas Lima for the middleweight title. Gertz versus Corrales is your co-main event, a featherweight matchup there. That should be a good one. And then Yanez and Ortega will be the opening bout on the main card. That, by the way, is going to start at 8 p.m. Eastern time. On Thursday, your preliminary card will start 5:15 p.m. Eastern time. That will be streamed on Bellator's YouTube channel, DAZN, and CBSSports.com. You know, Jake Hager, of course, you know, will have his third, his fourth professional MMA fight. He's going to be taking on Brandon Colton, who's 2-0. I remember when that fight was initially announced. I don't think Brandon Colton had a Tapology page. I couldn't find it. But Dalton Rossa, definitely that matchup against Tiger, that definitely is a fight to pay attention to. We got Bobby Volker, Sabah Hamasi. That should be a good one. Nick Newell, I mean, to me, the guy's just must-watch television. It's kind of surprising that he's not on the main card. I would think that they would put them on the main card, taking on Zach Zane, so that's a good one. Johnny Eblen, undefeated 185-pound fighter, is definitely selling the paid tissue. Adam Borks is on this card, I mentioned. Tony Misek, who I talked to, he's on this card, taking Jared Scoggins. We got the pro debut of Cody Law. So a really good Bellator card coming up on Thursday night. Of course, then on Saturday, we got the UFC fight card, Anderson Silva versus Uriah Hall, and sounds like that's going to be Anderson Silva's last fight. So we'll break it down for you coming up on Wednesday's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, if you ever have any topics, questions, comments that you want myself or Daniel Gavon to talk about here on the podcast, you can a couple ways you can contact me. You can do it on Twitter. I'm at Jason_Floyd. If you want to slide into my Instagram DMs, at Jason_Floyd is my handle on IG. Or if you want to shoot me an email, it is Jason@RadioInfluence.com. I will I love getting that listener interaction. So if there's ever anything you want us to talk about, just hit me up, whether it is on Twitter, Instagram, or via email. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report Podcast Interview Edition, which comes out every Sunday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Valor Hour with Tim Lloyd Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
This week on the Valor Hour, I'm joined by my co-host Justin Watson and Greg Hopkins as we take a look back at this past week's Bellator 249 and UFC Fight Island 6 cards, as well as a look ahead at this week's UFC 254 pay-per-view. Then we are also joined by Andrew Sturdivant as he gets ready to defend his 145 title at VFC 75, as well as Alex Pergonde as he vies for the 155 strap on the same show. All that and so much more this week on the Valor Hour.
Valor Hour with Valor Fighting Challenge matchmaker Tim Loy can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.